We're going to learn the Mishnah now on Daf Kuf Chaf Beis Amud Aleph. It's about 10 lines down from the top. By way of introduction, a guy is not allowed to be commissioned to do malacha on behalf of a Jew on Shabbos. However, if the guy does a malacha for his own purposes to benefit from it, we can sort of jump on the bandwagon and benefit from it. Nachri shehidlik esaner, the guy in this case lit the fire for his own purposes. Mishtamesh, now the Yisrael, Leoro, is allowed to benefit from the fire, from the light, from the warmth, from the fire. Yisrael. But the Im, Bishvil Yisrael, on the other hand, if the guy specifically had in mind that he wants to do this malach on behalf of a Jew, then also you're not allowed to benefit from a malach that was done specifically for the benefit of a Jew. And this is called a gzeiras chachamim, a rabbinic prohibition, which was established and formulated that we're not allowed to benefit from a maleches nochri b'Shabbos, a guy who does malach on behalf of a Jew on Shabbos. Some of the discussions that we'll have today, how exactly are you able to determine whether the guy did the malacha on behalf of the Jew or not? And in the case where a guy did a malacha on behalf of a Jew, then you would have to wait after Shabbos, what's called b'chdei sheyase. You would not be able to benefit from the malacha that was done by a guy on behalf of a Jew on Shabbos until you waited a period of time after the end of Shabbos, a lapse of time that would allow you to do that malacha for yourself. So in that sense, you're not benefiting from the malacha of the guy. And now the Mishnah gives us certain cases where the guy did a malacha on behalf of himself, and the Jew could benefit from that malacha. We already had that case in Hadlaka. The Mishnah wants to go on to other cases. Mile mayim lahashkos behemto. What happens is the guy in this case draws water from a well, which is in a Rishus HaRabim. The well itself is Rishus HaYochid. So this was an implementation of Meleches Hotzah, to take the water out of Rishus HaYochid, bring it into Rishus HaRabim. And Mashke Achrav Yisrael. The reason the guy did it lahashkos is behemto, so that, imagine that there's a pail of water that was drawn from this well, and the guy uses some of that water to feed his animal in the Rishus HaRabim. Now the Yisrael picks up the shirayim, the leftovers of this water, and he's allowed to use it to feed his behemoth. Why? Because the malacha was done on behalf of the guy himself. V'im b'shvil Yisrael asur. However, if the guy drew the water from the well for the purpose of the Yisrael, that would be prohibited. Asa nochri kevesh leired bo. If you have a boat and it's time to disembark, then you create a kind of a plank that you can walk. It's in a sled, and you go down from the higher boat to the shore. And in this case, the guy did this for himself. Now, exactly what malacha was involved here in creating this ramp could be maleches makah b'patish, could be maleches boneh. There certainly is a malacha d'oraisa involved here, but I can benefit because the guy did it for himself. He's got to get off the ship. However, the im b'shvil Yisrael, if the guy built this kevesh for a Jew, let's say he himself is not riding on the boat, he's not traveling on the boat, but he knows that he's Yisrael, and he knows that the Yisrael needs to get off the boat. So in such a case, asur. the Israel would not be allowed to benefit from this ramp that was created by a goy on his behalf on Shabbos. Maisa, the Mishnah concludes with a story about Rav Gamliel's Kenim, Shayuboyim Bisfino. They were about to dock on Shabbos from a boat, V'yosa Nochri Kevesh Leridbo. And the goy created a ramp in order to facilitate these rabbis to get off the boat. V'yardubo Rav Gamliel Uzkenim. And we'll see soon that Rav Gamliel understood that in this case, since the goy himself benefited and he had to get off the boat, so therefore he built the kevesh on for his own sake, therefore Rav Gamliel felt he was allowed to benefit from the kevesh. Utsricha, the Gemara wants to know, why do we need all these cases? We had a case of a nair, we had a case of mayim, drawing water, we had the case of the kevesh. Diashme ina nair, in the case of nair, when the guy lit the candle for himself, and the Mishnah says that we're allowed to benefit from that candle, there may be a specific reason that applies uniquely to nair, and that is mishum dinair li echad nair lemea. It makes no difference how many people benefit from one single nair. And therefore, we're not going to be afraid that the guy lit an extra candle for the Jew, because one candle's enough and there's no need for the guy to add extra candles for the Jew. So that since primarily the purpose of the guy, the motivation of the guy, was to light the candle for himself, therefore a Yisrael is allowed to benefit from that candle. Avol mayim, but in the case of water, dilma osi lafushe. If we allow the Jew to benefit from the water that was drawn from the well by the goy, then we're afraid that perhaps tomorrow, next Shabbos, the goy will add extra water and he'll do so on behalf of the Jew. Bishvil Yisrael. So therefore the Mishnah has to tell me that even in the case of water, where there's no principle called ner li'echad ner l'meya, we're not afraid that the goy is going to add water on behalf of the Jew, and therefore the Jew is allowed to benefit from the mayim. So now the Gemara asks for kevesh. What did the Mishnah add here by telling me the story about the ramp? I mean, it's just another application of the same general principle. Lomali, why do I need it? And the Gemara says, Maisa d'Rav Gamliel uskenim komashmal, and it really is unnecessary. It's just an introduction to the case and the story of Rav Gamliel and uskenim. And the necessity to tell us that story is because that's called halacha l'maisa. Whenever you have a story, it's almost like testimony that this was accepted l'halacha. Tana Rabbana. We learned in a braisa, Nochri shalikeit asovim. Now in this case, the guy is actually detaching grass from the ground as animal fodder. And he did it on behalf of himself. He has his own animals. Is machil acharav Yisrael. The Yisrael is allowed to allow his animals to eat the shirayim, the vestige, the extra grass that was cut. The im bishvil Yisrael. However, if the guy specifically cut down this grass for the benefit of the Jew, asur. In such a case, it was a meleches akum l'tzorich Yisrael, and that's forbidden. Same din is going to apply in the case of mila mayim, l'hashkos es behemto. The guy drew water from the well in order to feed his animal. His mashkach of Yisrael, whatever left over the water, the Jew is allowed to benefit from and feed his animal. But v'im b'shvil Yisrael, if the water was drawn by the guy specifically for the purpose of the Israel, asur. Then it would be a violation of Hanos Yisrael Mimeleches Akum if the Israel would benefit from the water, from the mine. And when do we assume that the guy is doing the malacha for himself. You know, we never really came to grips with this question, but how do I know if the guy did it for the Yisrael? So the Brice establishes that you're only allowed to assume the guy did it for himself if Ein Makiro, if the guy doesn't know, he has no association, relationship, friendship with the Yisrael. Aval Makiro, if they know one another, Asur. Then we're going to assume, unless we know for sure otherwise, which Gemara is trying to say in what circumstance we might know otherwise, but as a general rule, we assume that the guy was operating on behalf of the Yisrael. And why is that? Because they're old buddies, so to speak. And the reason in the case of Makiro, it's Asur, when he knows the Jew, is because the guy might be doing the Malacha now on two counts, both on behalf of himself and on behalf of the Yisrael. Any, the Gemara asks, is this really the so, that as soon as the guy, let's say, pulls out the grass and we assume that he doesn't know the Jew and he's doing it on his own behalf, then the Jew is allowed to take the leftover grass and feed it to his animal? V'amar av huna mar av chenina mabid odom behemto al gabi asovim b'shabes avolo al gabi mukta b'shabes. When you want to feed your animal on Shabbos, you have to make sure that it was not muktzah. That which you're feeding the animal is not muktzah. In this case, the guy was the one who cut down the grass on Shabbos. Going into Shabbos, ben hashmoshos, this grass was growing from the ground. It was there for muktzah. There was no way that during the course of Shabbos you can have any benefit from this grass until the guy came along and he cut down the grass. But that was the decision of the guy in the middle of Shabbos. So therefore, this grass should be muktzah. How can you feed your animal? Rav Huna tells us you're not allowed to feed your animal muktzah. The Gemara answers, the koyim le bi'apa, the azla hi the achla. That there are two ways you could feed an animal. One way is to pick up the food and put it in front of the animal. So there was leftover grass from what the guy cut down. I'm going to pick up the grass and place it and present it to the animal. That would be a violation of Tiltul Muktzah. Another opportunity is that I cause the animal to eat from the grass. The grass is Muktzah. I'm not going to come in contact with it. But what I'm going to do is Koyim Levi Ape. What that means is that I stand this way and that way. I block the animal from going to the left or to the right until the animal goes straight ahead and eats the grass. V'ozlahi v'ochla. And the animal on its own volition will eat from this grass. So I haven't moved the muktzah. Now the Gemara goes back to the Braisa. Omar Ma, we learned in the Braisa about Medvar Amum She'ein Makiro Aval Makiro Asur. If the guy knows the Jew, we have reason to suspect that the guy did the malacha not only on his own behalf, but on behalf of the Jew. What are we going to do with our Mishnah? Ha Rabbi Gamliel, Makiro Hafi. Rabbi Gamliel was getting off this boat, and other non-Jewish members of the crew, let's say, would create this ramp, and Rabbi Akiva had no hesitation using the ramp. And it's fair to assume that the Goyim knew Rabbi Gamliel. They were on the boat with him, who knows for how many months. Omar Abaye, Shalom b'fanav Havi. That when the Goyim constructed this ramp, this Kevesh, Rabbi Gamliel was nowhere to be found. In other words, according to Abaye's position, we'll soon see Rava, in order to allow benefiting from a Meleches Goy in a case of Makiro, it's got to be Shalom b'fanav. It means that the Yisrael is not around. The Goy would do a Melecha and hopefully get the nod of approval and appreciation from the Yisrael if the Yisrael is there. But if the Yisrael is not there, so Rava Amar, Rava gives a different answer, and he says Afilu Tema b'fanav. I don't have to introduce this ukimta, this assumption limiting and restricting the heta that Rabbi Gamliel implemented because Rabbi Gamliel was nowhere to be found. You know, he was locked up in his cabin. I don't need that. Why? Because nearly echad ner lemea. Here, Rava wants to implement this principle of nearly echad ner lemea, which means that there's no reason to assume that the guy would have done this on behalf of the Jew when we know he needs it himself. He has to get off the boat, so he needs that ramp to get onto shore. And there's no suspicion on our part that he would add anything on behalf of his good buddy, Rabbi Gamliel, because ner l'echad ner l'meah. You know, if you're talking about a case which the Braisa was addressing and the guy was drawing water and the guy knows the Jew, then we suspect that the guy may have drawn a little bit of extra water on behalf of the Jew. They know each other, they have a relationship, and he did that. But in a case of ner l'echad ner l'meah, let's say the guy lit a candle and he needed the candle for himself, so what are we afraid of? That he's going to light a second candle for his buddy, the Yisrael? Ner l'echad ner l'meah, one candle is enough for everybody. We just have to light up the room, turn on the lights. So too in the case of a kevesh. One kevesh serves all. And we're going to apply the principle of ner l'echad ner l'meah. So as Rabbi would say that if it's a case of Makiro, we need to say it's shalom b'funav. Rava says, forget about shalom b'funav. I don't need shalom b'funav. Let it be b'funav. But I have no reason to suspect that he would add anything on behalf of the Israel in a situation of ner l'echad ner l'meah. Now, in the case of Mayim, for example, where he's drawing water, and here you don't have a principle of ner l'echad ner l'meah, that the more people, the more water you have to draw, then it could be that Rava would admit that according to Abaye, if it's b'funav and it's makiro, it would be also. We have to worry about the fact that he added water on behalf of the Jew. And then we'd have to add the stipulation in order to be matir of shalom b'funav. Meisvei, the Gemara asks a kasha on Rava. From a Braisa, the Braisa embellishes a little bit that story of Ram Gamliel when he came from the boat. Omalem Ram Gamliel, he turns to the elders on the boat, his colleagues, and he says, Ho eva shalom b'faneinu aso, since the guy set up this ramp and we weren't around, is nered bo. We're going to go out and enjoy the benefits of this ramp. This is against Rava, because Rava says, in a case of ner l'echad ner l'meah, it's irrelevant whether it was b'funav or shalom b'funav. Why did Ram Gamliel have to tell this Canaan that it was shalom b'funav? So where answers Ema, perhaps we have to add a little bit to understand what Rabbi Gamliel was telling this Canaan. And Hoel Vaso'o Neredbo. What he meant to say was that since the guy set up, created this ramp, we're going to enjoy the benefit of it. But the hetu is not because of Shalom B'funav. It's Ner L'echad Ner L'meah, we don't need B'funav. Toshma, the Gemara now quotes a Mishnah in Machshirin, Masechta Machshirin, which seems to contradict both Abai and Rava. Ir she Yisrael v'nochrin darim b'tocha, you have a mixed population in the city. There are Jews and there are goyim. V'hoisav merchatz hamarachetzes. So the people went in to this bathhouse b'Shabbos, Jew and non-Jew alike. And now the question is, who heated up the water? Obviously it was the guy. But on whose behalf did he heat up the water? Well, the city is made up of population equally distributed, and there's a good chance that he heated up the water on behalf of the Jew. And therefore, we have to figure out where's the majority. It's 50-50. So the Mishnah goes through the following scenario. Scenario number one. Im rov nochrim. If most of the people who go to that bathhouse are goyim, I'm not exactly sure how you would know that. I have a funny story about that. If we have time, remind me later. Is mutalir chotzpah miyad? In other words, immediately after Shabbos. We don't use a Beis HaMerchatz on Shabbos with hot water in it, but right after Shabbos, he can go into the Beis HaMerchatz. Because he can assume that the guy heated up the water on behalf of Rov, on behalf of the majority who are going. But in Rov Yisrael, if most of those who generally have access to this Beis HaMerchatz are Yehudim, are Jews, then on Motzi Shabbos he can't jump into the water immediately. But rather, Bechdeshi Chamu Chaman, he's got to wait a lapse of time which would take to heat up the water. So he doesn't benefit from the fact that Goy heated up the water. And what we see here clearly from this brisa is that the Goy, in the case of Rov Yisrael, heated up the water on behalf of the Yisrael. That's his clientele. And therefore he heated up on behalf of the Yisrael. Which means the Yisrael can't benefit from it until what's called Bechdei Shiyas, until we allow for a period of time when he could heat it up after Shabbos. Now this Mishnah is against Rava, because Rava holds that even in a case where the guy knows the Jew, nevertheless, we don't assume that he does any extra malacha on behalf of the Jew. It's ne'el yechad ne'el lemea, meaning they used to turn on the fire and that would heat up all the water in the Beis HaMerchatz. They needed the hot water themselves, the goyim, and even if they don't make up the majority, it should be irrelevant according to Rava. In other words, why can't the Jews enjoy the benefit of that hot water that was heated up, since they know it was heated up on behalf of the goyim, and there's no chashash, there's no reason to suspect that the goy would have added any extra fire on behalf of the Jew? This mission is difficult even according to Abaye, because Abaye says that if the goy knows the Jew, if the malacha was done shelo b'fanav, then the Yisrael is allowed to benefit from it. Here clearly it's a case of shelo b'fanav. The Jews are not using the merchatz. So Gemara answers, Hosam ki mechameme adaite deruba mechameme. When the people who are running this Beis HaMerchatz heat up the merchatz, what they do is they heat it up specifically for the majority of the people who will benefit from the heating it up. So now, since we have a case of Rov, then the malach itself of heating up the water was done for the Jew, because it's done for the majority. So the Rabbanan said, you know what? We're not going to allow the Jews to enjoy the benefit of this water. If another malacha that the guy does for his own purposes, even if he includes the Yisrael in mind, then we're going to say, well, primarily he's doing it for the guy, for himself, and therefore it's mutter. And Abai will say it's mutter shelo b'fanav, and Rava will say it's mutter in the case of ne'er liyach and ne'er lemeah. But in this case, that the goyim are making a profit by running this bathhouse, and they heat the water with specifically on behalf, with you know, the deliberate intention in mind for those who will wash and benefit from this bathhouse, and you know they're doing what we would call a chil Shabbos, a malacha of heating up the water on behalf of the Jews, and therefore we have this gzera that you're not allowed to benefit from this water until after Bechdei Shiyas. Toshma. Let's quote another brisa. Ner hadolak b'mesiba. So the guy was together with a bunch of his friends, and on Shabbos he lit a candle. Im rov nochrim mutol shtamish liora. If most of the participants in that banquet, in that seuda, in that mesiba, are goyim, then mutar l'shtamish li'ora, the Jews are allowed to benefit from the or. Im rov Yisrael, but if most of the people sitting at the banquet are Jews, also, they're not allowed to benefit from the light. Because then we assume that the malach was done on behalf of the Jew. Mechza al mechza, if it's exactly 50-50, asur. Now, once again, we have a question here on Rava, because Rava holds that even in the case with a guy makiro, right? If there's ner liyech and ner lemea, and there's no chashash that the guy would have added anything on behalf of the Israel, then since the guy himself is benefiting from it, and he would have done it presumably even if the Israel was not there, therefore it's us. So Marig rejects this and says hosam nami. There too, like the case of the merchatz ki madliki, when the host will light this candle, and here we turn to Daf Kufchav Beis Amid Beis, Adaita Deruba Madliki. He does it specifically on behalf of the Rov. And therefore, if the Malach was done on behalf of a Jew, even Rav would agree in that case that the Jew is not allowed to benefit from the Malach that was done specifically on behalf of the Jew. If, on the other hand, it's Rov Goyim, and therefore the Ikar Adloka, the main primary focus and motivation of the Adloka on the Goy's part was for the Goyim, then it's Mutter. If, on the other hand, it's Mechtz al Mechtz, it's 50-50, then we have to assume that the Goy had in mind the Jews at the banquet no less than he had in mind the Goyim at the banquet, and therefore it's a Malach that's done on behalf of the Jews. Shmuel, the Gemara tells a story, Shmuel Ikla Lebei Ovin. Shmuel showed up in the house of Ovin, who came from a city called Toron. Asa hu nochri adlik shraga. A guy came and he lit a candle on Shabbos. And Shmuel adrinu Shmuel liape. Shmuel turned around so that his back would face the candle and he wouldn't benefit from the candle. He thought that the guy had lit the candle on behalf of the Jew, and you're not allowed to benefit from such a malach. But came in the chaz of the icy shtara. With the passage of time, he saw that the guy brought a document, and he starts reading the document to the light of this candle, the kokori. Amar Shmuel declared, Adaiti nafshi hu diadlik. Apparently, the guy lit this candle not on my behalf, but rather on his own behalf. And therefore, Adrinu iu liape gabi shroga, he turned his head and his back around towards the candle, and he benefited from the candle. Hadron alecha perek kol kisve, and now we're going to start a perek called kol akelim, which is the 16th perek of Shabbos. And this perek primarily deals with what's called a kli shemalachto le'isur, which means a utensil that's designated for use in a way that you do a malach that would be prohibited on Shabbos. And we're going to see that the Chachamim instituted a gzeir of tiltil, and they prohibited you from moving such a kli. And the main focus and issue that we're going to face is something called letzorech gufo, which means that what happens in a case where the Jew decides that he wants to use this kli on Shabbos, but not for its original purpose, which is a malachto le'isur, but rather he wants to use it for something that's mutter, change its original designation. So again, all that sounds very abstract, but as soon as we learn the Mishnah, you'll see how it gets flesh and blood. So the Mishnah says the following. Kol ha-kelim nitolim b'Shabbos, Vidal soseim imohem. Afal pishin isparku. Enom domim lidalso sabayis lefisha enom in amuchon. So first the Mishnah opens up this perek by setting up a distinction between two categories of dlosos. You can have a door for a building, for a structure. That structure is called mechubor lekarka. It's attached to the ground. And you could have a door for a movable utensil, like a closet, or perhaps some sort of an aron, you know, something that you use where you store things. So what they used to do is they would, very often, they would lift up the door from its hinges and then put it back on. So the Mishnah makes a distinction between kelim and bias. Bias is mechubel akaka. If you're going to put a door back on its hinges in a case of a house, that's meleches bone. And binyan applies whenever you have mechubel akaka. Anything that's attached to the ground, if you add or if you improve the construction, that's going to be meleches bone. So that's prohibited. But in the case of kalim, different kinds of closets, etc., that have doors to them, so then you're allowed to take off the door and put it back on. It's a very temporary kind of thing, and it's not mechubel akaka. It's a kli. Kli means a utensil which by definition is not attached to the karka. And that's not meleches bone. And in Mirsa Shem, we'll see the sugi inside how the Gemara develops this. Notel adam kurnus. Okay, let's talk a little bit about a kurnus. A kurnus is what we would call in English a sledgehammer. And this was used by the carpenters and designated for that which would be a malacha that's prohibited on Shabbos. And yet, even though we have a principle, as we indicated before, called a klisha malachta le'isur, that if it's designated for a malacha, we don't move such a kli on Shabbos. But nevertheless, lefatzea bo'asad gozim. If he wants to use this sledgehammer, instead of building a building with it, he wants to break nuts, he's using it as a nutcracker, then that's okay, because that's called litzorech gufo. He's using the hammer for a different purpose than it was designated, but nevertheless a purpose which is perfectly permissible. Another example. Kardom lachtoch bo'es hadvela. Kardom is a kind of an axe that's usually used to cut wood, clearly a malach on Shabbos, and yet, even though this axe is designated as for the purpose of meleches isur, he can still cut dried figs with it, because that's again a case of litzorech gufo. Here's another case. Megera. Megera is a kind of a saw, a very sharp, long knife, and has many teeth to it, and it does have an effect, it does do the job. But again, it's for purpose of cutting wood. We don't do that on Shabbos. But Lagur Ba Es HaGvina, he wants to use it to slice cheese, which is perfectly mutter. Another case, Magrefa. Magrefa is a kind of a very large shovel. And it's usually used out in the fields for the farmers. And he wants to use it, ligrof ba'es hagrogeres. You know, he's got dried figs, and they are stuck to the sides of the barrel, so he wants to scrape it off the barrel. He's allowed to do so. Normally, you would not allow tiltal of a kli shemalachto lisa, it's designated for isa, but here he's using it litzar kufo, and therefore it's muta. Another example, the same idea. Es harachas. Rachas is a kind of a pan that they used to use when they took the grains in and they had to separate the chaff from the grain. So they had a special pan which they used to winnow. And now he wants to use it on Shabbos for a whole different purpose. Let's say he wants to put food on it and feed a child or whatever it might be. Same thing is true, v'yes hamalges. Malges is also a kli shemalachto le'isur. It's a kind of a large metal kli that had three kind of teeth to it, and it was used to dig up the straw and turn the straw over and over, whichever way they had to do it. But he wants to use it loseis olav machol lekatan. He wants to put food in order to feed the katan. Now the Mishnah gives another bunch of cases which have to do with meleches ariga, weaving, which is one of the 39 meleches, and these were utensils that were designated for weaving. They were weaving utensils, which is clearly a kli shemalachto le'isa. For example, as hakush. Okay, kush is something that was used by the women for tviya, for embroidering, or karkar. Karkar was a kind of a a sharp-ended piece of wood that was used by the weavers, and he wants to use it lichtov bo, just simply to pierce through a strawberry, whatever it is, some sort of fruit, in order to eat it. He's just using it like as a pick for his food, and that's okay. Or a machet shel yad, we have these small needles that are used by the sewers for sewing. Sewing is one of the 39 malachas. But litovos hakotz, he wants to remove he has a splinter in his hand, so he wants to use it to remove a splinter. Or v'shel sakoyim, these are the larger kinds of needles that were used, again, within the context of sewing. And he wants to take it and use it liftoch bos hadeles, to open up a door, because he lost the key to the lock, and he wants to use this kli as a substitute to open the lock. That's l'tzorach gufo and it's muta. So ad kan, this is the Mishnah. Now the Gemara says the following. What does the Mishnah mean when it says, kol ha-kelim nitolim v'shabbos, and dalsoseim imoem, and then it says afal pi shenisparku, even though these doors on the closets and so forth were removed, then you can put them back on. And it says afal pi shenisparku b'shabbos, even though they were taken off on Shabbos. Now, if these doors were removed on Shabbos, then they were attached to their utensil, respective utensil, on Erev Shabbos, going into Shabbos. So the Gemara says, it doesn't make any sense. The Mishnah says, even those taken off on Shabbos, it's mutter. It should have said the exact opposite. Lomi boy bechol, as if you're implying that if it was taken off during the weekday, this door of a closet was removed during the weekday, then it goes without saying that you're allowed to put it back on Shabbos. Adarabba, in the case of Ab Mishnah, who was removed on Shabbos, is muchanim. Then going into Shabbos, it was part of a kli, and that's called agav avihen. So the ikar kli is the closet itself. The door, since it was attached going into Shabbos, was part and parcel of the closet, and therefore it has the status of a kli. But bechol, if it was removed before Shabbos, then ein muchanim agabay avim. It's not part of the utensil, and it didn't have a hachana as part of the utensil. So if the Mishnah wants to tell us a chiddush, the Mishnah told us afal pi shenisparku, not b'Shabbos, but b'chol, going into Shabbos, it wasn't even attached to the kli. Instead, the Mishnah says, even though he took it off and detached it on Shabbos. What do you mean, even though? Even if he should have said, even though he detached it on Friday. Amar Abaye. So Abaye reinterprets the Mishnah, and he says, Hochi Kamar. This is how you have to read the Mishnah. Kol ha-kelim nitolim v'shabbos, v'dal soseim imohem, v'af al pishin isparku b'chol. Nitolim v'Shabbos. So you have to sort of qualify and add that piece to the Mishnah that you're allowed to take and put back the cover, the door to the closet, because, or shall I say, even though it was removed during the weekday. Torah Rabbanon, we learned it a Braisa, Deles, Shel Shida v'Shel Teva v'Shel Migdol. These are three different types of closets. A shida, for example, is a very large wooden closet. A teva is something much smaller. It's sort of like what the money changers would use. They would, have this little place where they kept the money, so they had change to give the person who wanted to get change. And then there's Migdal. Migdal is more like a tower that was made out of wood. Notlin avalomachzirin. The Brisa says that on Shabbos, you're allowed to remove these doors from their hinges of those respective utensils, but you're not allowed to put them back on. And that's not something that necessarily we derived from our Mishnah. We didn't get that impression from our Mishnah. The Brisa continues, however, in the case of Deles Shalul Shaltarna Golem, right, there was a door that opened up the chicken coop. That's already called mechuba lekarka. It's connected to the ground. Lo notlim v'lo machzirin. You're not allowed to even remove it. So in the case of kelim, at least these closets and so forth, we're going to allow you to take off the door from its hinges. But in the case of a chicken coop, which is already not a kli, it's mechuba lekarka, then you have an issue of meleches bone, that we're not going to even allow you to take it off. Now, when you take off the door, when you detach the door of a chicken coop, that's called meleches soser. And if you recall, we had two meleches in the list of 39 that were each flip side of the other. There was bone when you build, and soser is when you take it apart. And if you take it apart on, with the deliberate intention to put it back together again, you're chayv for a malacha called soser. And therefore, when you have a door of a chicken coop, and the chicken coop is now a binyan, it's connected to the ground, by removing that door from its hinges, you are violating malacha soser. So the Gemara says, Bishlema, I understand very well, in the case of Tarnagolim, or Lul Shel Tarnagolim, Kosovar, the Brisa, the Tana of this Brisa holds, that came under Mechabre Bi'ara, since the chicken coop is actually nailed into the ground. Therefore, Yesh Binyan Bekarka, Yesh Stira Bekarka. So the Lul Shel Tarnagolim has the status of Karka. And any structure that either you create that's attached to the Karka, or that you take apart, disassemble to the Karka, you violate Meleches Boneh, Meleches Soser. Ella, but let's go back to the Reisha, the Brisa. Dele shel shida v'shel teva shel migdal. It says that you're allowed to take off the door from these utensils, but you're not allowed to put it back on. Somewhere it says, I don't get it. You're not being consistent. My kasovar. If you assume, I kasovar yesh binyan bekelim, that there's binyan even on utensils, when you create a utensil, that's also meleches boneh, even if it's not mechubil karka, is therefore the flip side of it would be yesh stira b'kelim, that you're not allowed to take apart a kli on yontif. Now, if that be the case, how could you make this distinction between notlim, that you're allowed, but ein machzirin? You're saying that ein machzirin because yesh binyan b'kelim when you put it back. But then, how could you take it apart? That would be stira. But if, on the other hand, v'i sover, maybe you're going to tell me ein stira b'kelim, is doch then ein binyan b'kelim. Then for that matter, why can't you put it back and reattach it to its hinges on Shabbos? And here we're going to have a machlokas abai v'rov. Omer abai li'olam kasavar yesh binyan v'kelim. This brisa reflects the shita that there is binyan v'kelim, v'yesh stira v'kelim, and therefore there's a malacha of stira v'kelim. Ah, now you're going to tell me, how did the Tana then allow you to take apart the delus, to detach the delus, that would be stira. And the answer is that when it says notlin, it means shenitlu ka'amar. Notlin, which we translated literally as you're allowed to detach it. No. Notlin means it was already detached. And ein machzirin. Omale Rav Ashtei Tshuvas B'Dor. I had two objections to your pshat. Chada first, then he told him katani. It doesn't say shen nitlu, they were already removed. Nitolim means you're allowed to remove them. And now you're holding yesh binya, yesh stira v'kelim, how are you allowed to remove it? The Odin, furthermore, my, what does it mean, avalo machzirin? If he did not detach it, so what does it mean to replace it? You know, you according to Abai says it was already detached. So what's Ava lo machzir? Ava lo machzir by definition implies that you had taken it apart and now you're putting it back together. Elama Rava, Rava therefore says that's not the pshat in this brisa, but rather kasavar ein binya bekelim vi ein stira bekelim. There's neither binya bekelim nor stira bekelim. If that be the case, so then why is it that you're not allowed to put it back together again? After all, ein binya bekelim gzera shema yiska. When he takes it off, that's not a problem. But when he puts it back on, we're afraid, says Rava, that he might knock a nail in. He might be tempted to do something that would be a permanent attachment of the door to the closet. Now, if he does that, then he violates a different malacha, which is called makar b'patish, finishing up something that needs to be perfected. Meaning, as long as he takes it in and out, on and off, he puts it, attaches it, detaches it, that's not a problem of makar b'patish. But the very moment he indicates that this is a permanent attachment, then he is perfecting the kli, and he violates makar b'patish. And now, if he puts it back on, we're afraid that he might do it in a permanent way. You know, today we have in manufacturing so many different opportunities and ways in which you could attach things. You don't even need a nail and a hammer, the different ways. So once he makes a permanent attachment, then he violates makar b'patish. The Mishnah says, "Notel adam kurnis lefatzeh bos hagozim." You could use this sledgehammer as a nutcracker. Omar Rabbi Yehuda, what does the Mishnah mean? Kurnus shel hagozim lefatzeh bos hagozim. Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that the Mishnah was not talking about a sledgehammer, but rather a hammer that's used and designated to break nuts. It's a nutcracker. That's called a klisha malachto leheter. And he's allowed to use it as a nutcracker. And the Mishnah is only implying, according to Rabbi Yehuda, that a sledgehammer, which is a klisha malachto lisa, you would not be able to use klitzar kufo. Aval shel nefachim, if you have this hammer that's used by the carpenters, lo, that you would not be allowed to use to break your nuts. Kasava, because Rabbi Yehuda holds, Darvish and Malach Talisa, Filutzar Gufo Asr. Rabbi Yehuda interpreted Mishnah in light of his Shita, that when you have a Kalisha Malach Talisa, you're not allowed to be metaltalit, period. Even for the sake of Gufo, for some Melechas Heter. Amale Rabba says to Rabbi Yehuda, how are you going to consistently interpret our Mishnah? Elameata. Sefer, let's look at the Sefer of the Mishnah. K'toni, v'es harachas, v'es hamalgeis, l'aseis olav l'katon. So we're talking about using these kalim that are used in connection with a malacha like zorah, like winnowing. And now he wants to use it as a plate and serve food for his child. Rachas u'malgeis, mi b'yachtele l'katon? These are not utensils that you could say were designated for the purpose of serving as a table for a katan. Elam Rabba, therefore Rabba says that's not the correct pshat in that Mishnah, but kurnishal nefachim. We're talking about a klisha malachto leisur, and it's a hammer that was used by the carpenters, designated for the purpose of breaking down metals and wood and so forth. But Lefatzea Boaz HaGozim, he's allowed to use that sledgehammer to break nuts. Why? Because Savar, because Rabba holds, and here we'll take a look on Daf Kuf Chaf Gimel Amid Aleph, Davar Shemalachto Le'isur Le'tzorek Gufo Mutter, that a Kli Shemalachto Le'isur, if you're using it for its own purposes, it's Mutter. So this is a Mirtz Shem where we'll stop. If you have any questions, it's a good time. We're on Kuf Chav Gimel Amid Aleph on the second line. And a Mirtz Shem, that's where we'll pick it up tomorrow. Just a few words of general introduction if we have a few minutes after finishing the daf. We know that the Chachamim prohibited tiltul in certain things, certain items, and this Isur goes back to Yemei Kedem, really to early in our history. And we had a figure back on Daf Lamed Amud Beis about the death of David on Shabbos and how they were able to move his body that was in the sun. So you see that the Isur tiltul really dates back to the early days. However, at some point in history, during the period of Nehemiah, one of the Nevi'im, and he's during the period of Binyan of Bayis Sheni, and there was terrible Chil Shabbos. So the Chachamim made an all-encompassing Isur Mukta called Gzeres Kalim, and they prohibited moving Kalim. Even Kalim that were Mutter L'Avlachto L'Heter. And gradually they loosened the belt, so to speak. They saw that the Chachamim saw that the people were starting to observe Shabbos again. So Badraga, one level after the other, they were matir this Gzeres Kalim, heter after heter, until they finally said that you're allowed to move all the Kalim, chutz mi meser agadol v'yoseh shamachresha, with the exception of two very expensive and sensitive Kalim. Now, our sugya, which we're going to do in Mirtz Hashem tomorrow, addresses the issue of a kli shemalachto le'isur, and whether or not you're allowed to move it letzorech gufo, number two, letzorech makomo, and finally, michama letzel, to take it out of the sun and bring it to the shade. So that's going to be the main thrust of this perek, kol hakelim. All right, we'll stop here.